right, welcome to the show. My name's Knight. I'm from TheologyOnline.com, and I'm sitting here with Lion, who's also from TheologyOnline.com. And as you may have guessed, we are filling in for Bob while he's on vacation, and we're honored to be here. And I know that everybody's looking forward to hearing Bob today, but you're going to have to struggle by listening to us two guys go at it for a while. So, Lion, welcome to the show. And
well, thanks, Knight. Nice to be here. It's always great to help fill in for Bob, even though those are big shoes to fill. We have a good time trying. We are also the same two that once did a memorable show on Field Rats.
That's right.
Did we do just one show on that? I think so.
We did O.J. Simpson show.
That's right. We did the O.J. show.
And we did the Field Rat show.
The Field Rat, I thought, was one of our all-time best.
Yeah, it was
a
classic.
We got a lot of good calls on that. We're not going to talk about Field Rats today, though. We do have a bunch of information or a bunch of things and questions that came up from Theology Online that we're going to answer as we go through the show. Theology Online works kind of hand-in-hand with Bob Inyard a lot of times. He comes onto the thread and debates for us. He's done some of our most memorable battle royales. Which one do you think was the best, Eric?
Well, the most popular was Battle Royale 7. That was the Does God Exist battle with Zaketh. And I think that's got about four times the views that any other battle has had,
wow,
at least. It's got about 20 times what most of them have received. And then, of course, the Battle Royale 10 with Sam Lamerson, that was Does God Know the Entire Future? Both of those can be found at TheologyOnline.com, if we haven't mentioned that. And, of course, KGOV.com, that's Bob's site that has his products and stuff. And we're asking that people call in today because we'd like to take some phone calls. And you can do that if you dial 1-800-8-INYART. And we got open topic, really nothing.
We can talk about anything today.
Sports.
And if you don't
politics,
call in, we'll just talk about stuff that we want to talk about. And remember, we did have a whole show on Field Rats once,
right,
so you might want to think about that.
Yeah, we could do that again. But no, we won't. We will not do that again. I did get some questions from the TOLers out there, so we'll get to that as well as the show
progresses.
Goes on. It's been a crazy weekend with the whole Mr. Carr admitting that or saying that he is the JonBenet Ramsey murderer. We could talk about that if you're interested in that.
Well, and right off the bat, I'd just like to say that kind of shows that Bob was wrong all along when he thought it was the Ramseys that did it.
And he should apologize.
He should. It's obvious that this guy did do it now. There's no question of it. It's just become so obvious, don't you think?
I think that, to me, what it proves more than anything is it's – and this is a statement about our justice system more than anything, don't you think?
Oh, definitely.
Because it's better to be an accused murderer in the United States than a school teacher in Thailand.
That's absolutely right.
That's brutal.
However, if you're going to be a teacher in Thailand, you should be a woman rather than a man, which could explain why he was going to get the sex change operation.
And he was working on that.
And he was trying to do his best. You know, KGov also spawned the part of it that was shadowgov.com back then. It was actually originally designed as kind of a game that Bob had created. And the idea behind shadowgov.com, for those of you who don't remember it or never got to see it, was that there would be people that would sign up, and they would join a club for a fee, and you would actually be in at what's called shadowgov.com, and you would become a judge. And your job at that point in time was to take current cases of the day and to render biblically sound decisions and judgments on the crimes of the day. For instance, O.J. Simpson. Remember when they did the O.J. Simpson?
Now, you're not saying that you would render a judgment like we do today.
No, not at all.
You're saying that we would do a judgment like as if it should be done.
As it should be done.
Right.
The biblically sound judgment that should be done, not from a 12-man mob jury of the dumbest people that you could possibly get onto a jury, but rather it would be one-man judge who would look at a case, at all the evidence that he could that was presented to him or her, well, to him, and then make a judgment on that based from biblical doctrine, which requires 2 to 3 witnesses, and it gives you an idea of what the witnesses would be, what the evidence should be, and to go on from there. And he actually did the JonBenet Ramsey case. You remember that, Mike?
I do. I do remember. That was one of the early cases. Was O.J. one of the cases?
O.J. was one of the cases,
oh,
I believe.
Like, and then
sure.
Might have been I don't know if the Clinton one was...
The Clinton Juanita Broadbent was in there, that's correct. And
it seems that way, if my memory serves. Yeah. I don't know if any of those judges from way back when...
Want to call in and kind of talk about some of their decisions. It was very good.
Yeah, that was a pretty cool idea, really, if you think about it, because like a lot of times nowadays on TOL or wherever you are and you're talking to somebody and you say, well, you know, what should be done with this guy or this person or this murderer or... accused murder, and almost always people, you give an answer, and they say, well, but you couldn't do that because of this rule or that law or this law or that law. But that isn't what I'm asking. My question to them is, what should be done to this person? Forget about our justice system, what little is left of it. I'm talking about, you know, what should this happen to this person just right off the bat? You know, should they be executed swiftly, blah, blah, blah. And so that's what made it interesting was not the fact that what should we do in today's system? Who cares? I mean, because we see that as a failure, right?
Yeah. Virtually everything about the system is a failure. In fact, obviously we have Bob's usual statement, and I use this on lawyers all the time when I'm in court, and it is that it's not a justice system. It's just a system. And I'll tell you, cops and lawyers, every one of them laughs when I say that, and then they go, but you know, that's true. Because it is.
Right.
It is true. We don't have a justice system. We have just a system that works once or twice, you know, during a cycle. But even really, not even that often, because I would say 97% of all cases that come to court in today's court system are plea bargained. And plea bargaining is an absolute crime. Because plea bargaining does two things. One, it gets the innocent, the people who think that they're innocent, whether they are or not, you'd have to find out. I mean, in some cases, it might be speeding or some little thing like that where you could say maybe they really are innocent or they think they're innocent, even though maybe they were speeding. But no matter what the case is, they will take a guilty plea because the consequences of not taking the guilty plea are more dangerous to them than it would be if they just go ahead and say, yeah, okay, I just did it and give me the $50 fine or $100 fine or whatever it is. So they go ahead and they do that instead. And the other thing it does is it gets guilty people to get off of their crimes. Somebody murders somebody and they plead guilty to a lesser offense and they don't get put to death. They don't get put to life in prison, which is a crime also. But they get a much lesser charge. They get a much lesser penalty. And therefore, they're getting out of what should be happening to them instead of being given the full measure of penalty that they should receive from a just system. So plea bargains are wrong both ways. And now getting back to the JonBenet Ramsey case from the beginning that we were talking about, what did the shadow gov judges, what was their decision on who was guilty of her murder? Do you remember it all, Knight?
I do not remember. Do you remember?
The consensus of the judges was that both Patsy and John Ramsey were guilty of her murder. It could have been just one of them, but since the other one was attempting to be an accomplice, even if it was just one of them, they both would be found guilty under this case. Because if the father did it by himself, which is what I actually believe myself, but if he did it, then the mother was attempting to cover it up. If the mother did it, then the father was attempting to cover it up. But either way, they're both guilty at that point in time.
Well, the mother definitely didn't do it alone, just based on the facts.
No, not on her own. Although there are some kind of misconceptions about some of the things that happened there. But obviously there were some other elements brought in. And I thought that Bob brought up some really good points on how some of those things could have happened. When you look at the evidence of what the neighbors saw, the people who left it that night. And didn't you say you just saw a really interesting thing about the handwriting analysis recently?
Yeah, I did. And in fact, I saw that on TOL. I think Crash posted a link to the handwriting analysis of John and the ransom note.
Right.
And it was eerily similar, let's just say that.
To
being
his writing, right? And if you remember right, there were two attempted notes that were crumpled up and thrown away in a wastebasket upstairs that had been written prior to the final note that they had. And how many people that are getting ready, who have just murdered a little girl, are going to go up into the upstairs rooms, they're going to write out a note, and they're going to go ahead and make three drafts of it and throw it away while they're doing it there in the residence? It's ridiculous.
Of course, all this just adds to the fact that this car fella had nothing to do with
it. No, he had nothing to do with it.
I mean, other than he was completely infatuated with the case, and he probably did dig up some things that most people don't know about.
Yeah, he's a weirdo.
But
and,
you can do that.
Right,
you
and he was writing, or supposedly he was trying to write a book about this case along with other ones, and therefore He was really digging into the case to find out as much information as he could. I mean, several of the bolder detectives and the lab people involved, they quit because they couldn't stand the way the case was going originally. It was so horribly bungled. And I'd have to say that I don't necessarily think that it was bungled totally by accident. I have to say that there could have been other things involved, and it's too bad because it's a real crime to have a government agency not handle things as above board as they absolutely should. I'm kind of surprised that they want to bring this back to the light at all, and they probably don't, but it has come out. Anyways, I don't want to spend the whole show on that. I just thought it was really interesting that it's back in light after the Shadow Gov judges had made their decision long ago on this case, and of course, unfortunately, our real system would not look at it in that light. And, you know, you brought up something, Knight, a minute ago, which was that in order for this to work correctly, for a good justice system to work, we do have to have some of God's other principles established. For instance, perjury. The crime of perjury. What should happen to somebody that commits perjury? What is the biblical punishment for that? Well, what it is this. Whatever the punishment would be for the person if he was found guilty because of your perjury, that's the punishment you would receive. So if somebody stole a car and you lied about it or you falsely accused them of it, then if he could have gotten twice the amount, if he would have had to pay back twice the amount that the car was worth and then get 20 lashes with a whip, that's what you would get for being the person that did the perjury. Same thing for murder. If you murdered someone, well, you would be put to death if you were found guilty for that. So if you perjured against some person trying to either keep them off of getting found guilty or to try to get them to be found guilty when they're not, that's the punishment that would happen to you. And you would see a lot less perjury than goes on today, because I can tell you right now that perjury happens all the time in the justice system. Even the lawyers, the defense lawyers, it's just terrible. I mean, it's like a game, but it's not a very good game.
So, again, if you want to call in and discuss this or any other topic, it's 1-800-8-INYART. And I guess we could take a question from online.
Okay, let's do one of the TOL questions from Theology Online.
And this one's from Redfin, and he asks, why does God demand faith?
Why does God demand faith? Interesting question. There's a couple different ways you could come at that. And I think the first way to look at it, because he could be asking two different things here. So I'll give the first answer and then let's go into the second one. The first one is, what is faith? What is it that God is demanding when he says, when he asks, why does God demand faith? And I think we have to remember what God says faith is in Hebrews 11:1. In Hebrews 11:1, God says, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. It's not blind faith like most people think of today. He says that it's the substance of things hoped for. So what is the substance of something that is hoped for? Well, if we hope for there to be the true God and for there to be the heaven, he is the substance behind that hope. He is the true God and there is a true heaven. And therefore, that's the reality of what it is. The evidence of things not seen is the evidence to prove that he is the substance and that there really is that thing there. So we are to look at the evidence in the world around us to see if that substance is really true. So for us not to believe, not to have faith, not to believe in what is reality is dangerous for us and it's harmful. So we should believe in what is real and not in what is faith. A block of wood that you cut up and use part of it to cook your food and the other part to kneel down and bow to and sacrifice your children to, that has no substance. It's not a real God. Obviously, you're using it to heat your food or to make a stool out of, and then you're bowing down and worshiping it. Obviously, it didn't make you. It's ridiculous. There's no evidence to support that that is a true God. Therefore, it is bad for you to believe that that is the true God and that you can receive any kind of blessing or that you can rule your life or run your life on that piece of wood's dictates, because it doesn't have any dictates. So God says it's dangerous for you to not believe in what is real. It's just like the people today that believe that, well, we don't know that anything's real. Everything that we see is really not real. So if they walk out in front of a bus because they don't believe that the bus is real, they're going to get killed. And that's what happens when you don't believe in reality. And then there's a second way. Do you want to go into that?
Well, I just think that, you know, a lot of people ask this question, and really what they're kind of getting at is, you know, is it fair that just because I don't believe, then I'm going to go to eternal damn, you know, punishment in hell. And I think people really don't understand that you know, hell and heaven concept, in that God, it isn't that God just likes to torture people and put them in hell. It's just that he's allowing them to go to the place where they choose to be. So God demands faith in as much as he wants us to make the right choice. But if we choose otherwise, he is a gentleman and he allows us to make that choice.
Yeah, he doesn't demand that we have to go to heaven. He's not going to make anyone go to heaven that doesn't want to go to heaven. They get to make their choice themselves. And conversely, no one goes to hell by accident. You go to hell because you choose to go to hell. Okay, we have
Excellent.
A couple calls coming in, so let's go ahead and take one
We're
of those.
We're going to take line one. Let's see here. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello, Lyon?
This is Knight and Lyon, yeah.
Knight and Lyon.
Hey, hey, guys, this is Brian Enyart calling.
Hey, Brian.
How you doing?
This is
I'm doing well.
D2I on TOL.
Ah, D2I.
D2I, that's me.
Right. What's up?
Well, I just wanted to know what you guys think. This fellow who is claiming that he killed JonBenet Ramsey, how would you sanction him under the Shadow Gov if it turns out that he didn't really do it?
Well, I think we might need to – now, if we're just looking at the JonBenet Ramsey claim that he murdered her, that's all we're going to go in right now. We're not going to go into any of the other things that he may have done because we're just going to go into that.
Yeah, exactly.
What has he done so far? He has lied about the crime, so he's committed perjury. But his perjury is not to get someone else convicted or punished for it. Therefore, he wouldn't get the same punishment as that is. But he could be deterring the investigation and taking precious resources away from it. So to the cost that cost the government in time and in manpower and in actual dollars and cents cost, I think he should be punished to that amount. And then I think there should be some corporal punishment. Unless the guy is just a total wacko. If he really is mentally incompetent, then we should probably deal with it that way.
And plus, you also got to remember that assuming we were in the real system, the killers of JonBenet would have already been executed.
Yes.
So then he wouldn't have got around to, in 2001, telling his grandfather that he was under suspicion for this crime. And then now that it's 2006, you know, now he's admitting to it. None of that would have ever came about. So it's kind of hard to determine some of these things in light of those. If you have to put it all into the perspective of a righteous system, and that's where it becomes difficult to do, because some of this crime would be a closed case already.
Right, and our criminal justice system right now is not in any way, shape, or form looking at the parents or the living parent of JonBenet Ramsey at this point in time as a criminal. Therefore, it's not like he's really pulling the attention away from him. Our system should still be looking for her murderer diligently, and they should still be going after the Ramseys if that's where the evidence points, which it is.
Yeah.
So they should be doing that. So it's not like he's stopping that part of it happening. But he is costing man hours and dollars and cents from going towards what should be being done in the real system. So I think that he should be penalized towards that. But great question. Right. Yeah,
okay, thanks. Yeah, so you two think restitution and corporal punishment if he's making it up.
Oh, well, if he's not making it up, then obviously he should be put to death. But
yeah, obviously.
We don't believe for a second, I don't have any belief at all that he is doing. I don't think that the evidence shows it. No, we don't have all the evidence, but they're not bringing it forward very quickly either, which they would be if they really had anything, and they're not. I think that's the case. But if he's nuts, if he's totally insane, then, you know, we might have to deal with it a little different because the guy sure does look a little loopy.
Yeah, well, because I'm thinking he's making a claim that he killed someone.
Right.
And if you're making that kind of a claim in perjury, you'd think that maybe he would deserve a death penalty. Would you think that's a little extreme or what?
Yeah, that would not be the case. If you're claiming that you did something that you didn't do, you can't be held. You don't get punished for what it would have been if you did do it. It's only if you're trying to either get someone off of doing that or if you're trying to convict someone. Now, if you're trying to get yourself convicted, it's not the same as trying to get an innocent person convicted, because you're being a liar and you're trying to do that either because you're trying to seek fame or whatever else. But the damage is not the same. You really have not murdered anyone and you've not helped anyone get off of it. Except maybe for the point of, let's say that the real murderer paid him money to try to get him to do this. In that case, I think he could be found guilty and put to death because he would be trying to get the real murderer off. But I don't think that that's what his intentions are here. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do not think. I think it's fame. I think that's what he's doing it for, just for attention. I mean, if he's not truly guilty, then obviously it's got to be fame.
Either that or he's Netto, right?
Or he's Netto.
And it could be a combination of wanting fame and being Netto. So I kind of think that that's where it goes with him. So, yeah, I personally don't think that that's the way we would go with it. And, you know, you'd want to really look at it a little more in depth if we're going to do an actual judgment on it. But that's where I would take it from here.
Excellent question. Okay. Thanks, Brian. Yeah.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey, no problem.
All right.
Cool.
We had another call on line two. Line two, you're on the air.
Hey, Nine Lion, it's Axe
912 out. All right.
How's it
going? I haven't heard you from a long time. How come you haven't stopped by my house, mister?
Hey, you know, I need to get that done. I'm actually working days now, so I'll swing by. Oh. I just didn't want to wake you up.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm usually up by one.
All right, I'll get it done then.
Awesome.
You've had some of the most awesome threads on TOL lately that, I mean, I'm seriously thinking about publishing some of them because they're just absolutely outstanding. And I mean, every time, every morning, I look forward to getting online to see if there's been another post. And you know the two threads I'm talking about with you and Hilston and you and Sentient Synth. They're just, I just got to tell you how exciting those are to read. So
yeah, I would have to say you're one of the top theologians I've ever had the privilege of knowing. So awesome to get to talk to you again.
So what's
thank you, I appreciate that.
What's up today?
Well, yeah, actually today I wanted to just run something by you guys. Been doing a little bit of research, and I know that one of the things that where the open view sometimes is criticized is that some say that we don't have much biblical material in the New Testament. And so I've been doing some research, and I think that I hope that I found something that might turn out to be pretty strong, that it shows not only the openness, but I think that it shows an unfulfilled prophecy.
Well, first of all, how about just real quick, why don't you just give like a one-sentence summary to those that might not know what you're talking about open view.
Good idea.
And openness theology. I think you could probably sum that up real quick, couldn't you, in just a real...
Sure. Yeah, basically the open view, those who believe in the open view, we believe that that there are certain portions of the future that God has settled, not because they're already done, but because when that time comes, God will take control and he will make certain things come to pass. However, there are many, many portions of the future that are unsettled or that are open, and that God responds to us. He's working with us when we pray. God may change his mind about something that he was thinking of doing, which is completely in line with, say, Jeremiah 18, Ezekiel 18, things like that. That basically that God is in time with us. He's working with us. He's suffering with us. He's loving with us, etc.
Excellent.
Great.
Okay, so tell us your thing that you found in the New Testament that you think is pretty strong.
You know, actually, it's in Acts chapter 21. Paul and his companions are in Caesarea in the 8th verse, and they come to the house of a man named Philip the Evangelist. And a certain prophet named Agabus comes down and visits with Paul.
Right.
Now, Paul has plans to go up to Jerusalem, and it's during the time of Pentecost. It's the Feast of Weeks. And they know or they believe that if Paul goes there, he's going to have some troubles because the Jews that are in Jerusalem are going to want to kill him for the work that he's done in the ministry. And so Agabus prophesies, and it's in verse 11, and it says, "When he had come to us, he took Paul's belt, bound his own hands and feet, and said, 'Thus says the Holy Spirit, so shall the Jews at Jerusalem bind the man who owns this belt and deliver him to the hand of the Gentiles.'" So Agabus is prophesying that Paul will be bound by the Jews, and then he will be delivered to the Romans if he goes to Jerusalem. And so, obviously, Agabus being a prophet of God, Paul's companions hearing this are extremely worried that this will happen to Paul.
Right.
And the first thing that I find that's extremely interesting in this is that the response of Paul's companions. Verse 12 says, "Now when we heard these things, both we and those from that place pleaded with him not to go up to Jerusalem." Now what I don't understand is if the closed view or the settled view, the view of the Calvinist is true, and according to the Calvinists that we talk with every day, it seems that all of these men in the Bible they're familiar with this view. They're familiar that God is the future's already settled. So if God prophesies something through one of his prophets, then it has to happen.
Right.
So I think
exactly.
that this is interesting that these guys...
Right, why would they try to intervene? If they know that it's already a set, done deal, why would they try to intervene?
Exactly. They're pleading with him not to go, which seems interesting if Agabus the prophet said, when Paul goes, this is what's going to happen. So now they're trying to change the mind, trying to change Paul's mind. In verse 13, it says, Paul answered, what do you mean by weeping and breaking my heart? For I'm ready not only to be bound, but also to die at Jerusalem for the name of the Lord Jesus. So when he would not be persuaded, we ceased saying, the will of the Lord be done. So they were basically, in effect, trying to alter or change the will of God.
Yeah, but see, then they realized that they couldn't, so they just gave up.
Exactly. There you go. So anyway, so what happens, and this is where it gets interesting, Paul goes to Jerusalem, and we find that the Jews from Asia stir up the crowd. And these men, when they seize Paul, and they basically are beating him within an inch of his life.
Right.
And we can jump forward to verse 27 in Acts 21. It says, now when the 7 days were almost ended, the Jews from Asia, seeing him in the temple, stirred up the whole crowd and laid hands on him, crying out, men of Israel, help. This is the man who teaches all men everywhere against the people, the law in this place. And furthermore, he also brought Greeks into the temple and has defiled this holy place. For they had previously seen Trophimus the Ephesian with him in the city, whom they supposed that Paul had brought into the temple.
Right.
And all the city was disturbed, and the people ran together, seized Paul, and dragged him out of the temple, and immediately the doors were shut. Now as they were seeking to kill him, news came to the commander of the garrison that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. Immediately took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. And when they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating him. Then the commander came near and took him and commanded him to be bound with chains. And he asked who he was and what he had done.
Okay, Jeremy?
Yeah, go ahead.
Acts 9 and 12 out. We're going to have to go ahead and pause here for just a minute because we're coming to the end of the show here in just a couple of minutes. So what we'd like you to do is if you would stay on the line and we'll pick right back up with you and go on with that. And the show will be
half of the show.
What's that? Yeah, on the second half of the show, which we won't be getting in some places, but we will in others. And everybody will be able to get it on the actual internet site, kgov.com. They'll be able to listen to the whole thing. So you'll be able to hear the rest of Acts 9 and 12 out's reply to this. And we'll go into
and
a little
Dredd,
deeper.
Hang on the line also, because I know you're after Acts 9 and 12 out.
Right.
We'll get to you as well.
And anybody else that wants to call in, go ahead and call in. We will be doing another half hour of the show right following this. So we'll have it there. So feel free to call in and give us your questions.
And we'll be back right after this.
You hypocrite. Are those the first words that Christ will say to you? Now that's a scary thought. But many Christians overlook the words that Jesus spoke, and they use a cliche instead. Hi, this is Brian Rohrbaugh on behalf of Bob Enyart Live. Is it possible to be nicer than God? What about meaner than God? Remember the words from a popular song? They will know we are Christians by our love. Many Christians who ignore what God calls sin think that they are being nice by not confronting a sinner. But is it really nice to withhold God's truth? To let someone think God approves of their behavior? Or is that meaner than God? Find out in the audio series Nicer Than God, a Bible study on the value of God's Word. I spoke in one part of this series. Find out what I have to say. Order Nicer Than God. It's a fun and timely series on biblical wisdom. Order yours today. Call 1-800-8-ENYART. That's 1-800-836-9278. And ask for Nicer Than God. Or order online at kgov.com.
The murderers on death row today should be executed. Excuse me, what did he just say? My name's Doug McBurney, and I heard Bob Enyart say just that in 1995, and I've been listening ever since. I found out that the death penalty is at the heart of the gospel, and that Christianity and justice need not be mutually exclusive. A video titled God and the Death Penalty is available today at kgov.com. God and the Death Penalty examines God's ideas about justice. You'll learn the New Testament verses affirming the death penalty and understand why God never repealed capital punishment. Find out God's opinion. Order God and the Death Penalty today at kgov.com. That's God and the Death Penalty at kgov.com.
Okay, this is Lion and Knight, and we're continuing on with the show. And we still have Acts 9 in, 12 out from Theology Online on the line. And just as a little quick recap, for those who might have just started joining the show, we're going into some of the beliefs of the open view, which is basically that the entire future is not set. The people who believe in open view, which is us, the future is not completely set, that God does allow free will, and that that's part of our makeup and the way that he created everything, that God is not outside of time, but rather that he is inside of time working with free will agents. And Acts 9 and 12 out is showing us some evidence for this in the New Testament in Acts chapter 21, and now we're up to verse 20, I think about 27. So Acts 9 and 12 out, are you still there?
I'm here.
Sorry, we're novices with the phone system.
I probably hung up on you.
Okay, so we're starting back in what, verse 27 of Acts 21, is that correct?
Yeah, just I'll just quickly recap.
Great.
So that we know what's going on. What I'm trying to establish is Agabus the prophet in verse 11 prophesies that Paul would be bound by the Jews and would be handed over to the Romans. And we see that what's happened so far is when Paul goes to Jerusalem, that the Jews from Asia stir up the crowd, and they basically tell a lie about Paul. So all the people in the city seize Paul, and they begin to beat him, and they're actually trying to kill him.
Right.
And we were just up to the point where the commander of the garrison had caught word of what was going on, and so he sent soldiers down to rescue Paul.
Right, and one of your evidences was that the Holy Spirit had told Agabus about this and had said that Paul would be bound and kept like this, and that the disciples, instead of just saying, oh, well, there's nothing we can do about that if that's God's will, they tried to talk Paul out of going there because they didn't want to see that happen to him. But then Paul said, hey, I am willing to die if that's what is to happen. I will do anything for Christ. So I'm going anyway, and we will do what needs to be done. And so he continued on. So the question is, if the disciples already knew that the future was set, there was nothing they could do to change that, why did they even try to talk Paul out of it? And Paul doesn't say, well, this is the way it has to be. He says, it's the way I will it to be, just like Christ did when he said, not my will, but your will. He was he's saying that if there was a way to take away from him, fine, but whatever you want me to do, that's what I will do. And Paul's saying the same thing here to God. He's saying, hey, whatever needs to be done, I'm willing to do it because I'll do it for Christ.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's pick back up there.
Exactly. So as we continue on, I think we're in about verse 30. It says, and all the city was disturbed, and the people ran together. They seized Paul and dragged him out of the temple, and immediately the doors were shut. Now as they were seeking to kill him, news came to the commander of the garrison that all Jerusalem was in an uproar. He immediately took soldiers and centurions and ran down to them. When they saw the commander and the soldiers, they stopped beating him. Then the commander came near and took him and commanded him to be bound with two chains, and he asked who he was and what he had done. And some among the multitude cried one thing and some another, so when he could not ascertain the truth because of the tumult, he commanded him to be taken into the barracks. And so what's interesting here is, and we see later on, that the commander of the garrison actually says that he rescued Paul from the people.
Right.
The people were trying to kill Paul. So even if we have... you know, kind of like Lion argued just a minute ago, kind of in jest, that, well, it was God's will, so they had to do it. So Paul went up to Jerusalem. Current circumstances changed.
Right.
Jews from Asia stirred up the crowd. They didn't just take Paul and bind him and deliver him to the Romans.
They were going
to
kill him.
They actually tried to kill him, and the Romans rescued him.
Right.
And so we have this New Testament prophecy. It says that Paul will be bound and delivered to the Gentiles, but the reality of the situation is when Paul goes, they try to kill him, and the Romans actually rescue him.
Yeah, that's a great point.
And so in my mind, I see that as that's an unfulfilled prophecy in the New Testament. So I just kind of wondered what you guys thought
now,
about
it. And let's just make clear exactly what you're saying, because here's what you're saying is the difference. In the actual prophecy, it was the Jews took him and then took him to and bound him up and then took him to the Gentiles. In reality, what happened is the Jews bound him, and instead of taking him to the Gentiles, they decided to kill him. So that's showing an unfulfilled prophecy because they were going to kill him. And then instead of him being taken and given to the Gentiles came and took him from the Romans. That's what you're saying is the difference, correct?
Right. And not only
the Gentiles came and took him from the Jews. I'm sorry.
Right. And I would take it even one step further. that there's no evidence in the passage to say that the Jews even bound him. It just says that they seized him.
Actually, you're right. It was the Romans that bound him with the two chains when you look at it that way, so that's great.
Yeah, so we don't have any portion of this prophecy being fulfilled.
Yeah, that's excellent.
When you bring this up online, I think you have, right? You've brought that up. What's the response been from...
Many of the Calvinists or the settled viewers have said, well, it doesn't really matter to us because he was seized and he was bound and he was taken by the Romans. So the prophecy
it's close enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, basically it's close enough. It was almost there. It wasn't perfect, but it works for us.
Okay.
That's great stuff.
That is. Well, thanks again for calling in. That was a great question, a great evidence, I think. And there again, we're going by the evidence, right? That's what we go
Wonderful.
By. We don't just go by blind faith. We look at what the evidence states.
I agree.
Great, Acts 9.
Thanks.
You take care.
I'll stop by and see you. You guys take care.
Right, okay, God bless.
All right. God bless you, too. Bye.
All right. So let's...
Dreadhelm.
Let's go to Dreadhelm on line one. Dread, what's going on?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Great to hear from you.
Yeah, it's good to hear you on the show. You guys
Thanks.
Are doing great.
It's the TOL version of BEL.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to call in and tell you, you guys have got an awesome website, the best theology website on the internet.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I enjoy it a lot.
Well, we enjoy your participation on there because you're one of the standards on there. You've been on there for a long time. You know, next year will be 10 years of theologyonline.com.
Wow.
And so that's pretty impressive for a website.
And, it really is.
And you know, if you type in on Google Theology Forum, you get 13.4 million hits, you know, which is basically finds, and TOL is number one. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. It is awesome.
So
hey, now aren't we going to have a Theology Online Day coming up or something like that?
Well, we got a bunch of the big folks, the heavy hitters coming in from out of town.
Yeah, we might have to have Josh come out on that.
Polly's coming in, and of course Cleet's coming in. And then
do you know
turbo.
About that, Dreadhelm?
No, I didn't.
Okay, well, we'll give you the information.
Early September, it'll be kind of a TOL convention. But anyways, that's pretty exciting. So
great.
Anything else for you today?
That's about it.
All right.
Good work, guys.
Hey, thanks for calling in. It's great to hear from you.
Thanks. Yep. We got
keep posting.
We got Jefferson on line two. Jefferson, what's going on?
How are you?
Hey, Jefferson. Good.
Hey, I actually have a disagreement on you.
Oh, good. Okay.
It's regarding what the biblical guidelines are as far as whether or not we should execute, whether or not the Bible recommends we should execute Carr, John Benet's best killer.
Go for it.
In 2 Samuel chapter 1,
okay.
There was a young Amalekite who falsely claimed to have killed King Saul.
Ah, that's true.
And David's response to that was not to try the young man to see whether or not it was a false confession.
Yes, I think I might have a slight objection to that, though, because why did David kill him? It wasn't because he made the false accusation, right? He killed him for two reasons. The main reason he killed him was because he thought he had really done it, right?
Right.
And the reason he killed him was because he thought that he had taken it into his own hands to kill the king that God had appointed over Israel. Remember that David himself had numerous chances to kill the king and had not done it because God had appointed him as king over Israel. Right?
Yeah, of course he did it without a hearing, unless the evidence that he had was the crown, King Saul's crown that he presented to David.
Right.
Maybe at that point David figured, all right, this is enough evidence.
Well, but here's the big point we're getting into. Why did he kill him? Did he kill him because he lied about killing the king, or did he kill him because he thought he killed the king?
Well, he obviously thought he did kill the king.
So that's why he put him to death. Not because he thought that he had, not because he had lied about killing the king, even though he did lie. But not because of that. That's not why he put him to death.
Right. Of course, David didn't have a full trial.
That's true, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a great biblical point to bring up, and that's where we would say, okay, let's discuss it, get in and see whether or not it fits the criteria. And that's the kind of stuff we did on ShadowGov. Jefferson, did you ever get in on ShadowGov when it was back in force?
Not very much, no.
Yeah. Well, you would have been fun in there. You would have had a good time, I have no doubt.
Okay.
Well, great question.
All right. Just want to throw that out there.
Nothing else for you today, Jefferson?
Nope, that'll do it for right now. All
that
right,
was cool. Awesome, and we'll see you on TOL, bud.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
Right. Bye-bye.
Jefferson is another awesome TOLer.
He is. He is fantastic.
All right, so let's get back to Truth Man's question.
Okay.
And see what you think of this. Truth Man asks, with a wink, can the devil repent and turn to God?
Can the devil repent and turn to God? No, he can't. First off, we know that he doesn't want to, but I guess we could always say, well, why doesn't he? And I think that we find the answer to that in, let's see, it is in Hebrews chapter 2, and the actual verse is 2:16. But I'd like to go up just a little bit further, say to 14, so that we kind of get the context. Hebrews 2:14 says, "Inasmuch then as the children have partaken of flesh and blood, he himself likewise shared in the same, that through death, that Jesus Christ, through death, he might destroy him who had the power of death, that is, the devil, and release those who through fear of death were all their lifetime subject to bondage," which is us. Although at the time he was really talking to the children of Israel, but it still equates to sinful man. "For indeed," this is verse 16 where God says, or where the actual verse is coming into this play. It says, "For indeed, he," God, "does not give aid to angels, but God does give aid to the seed of Abraham. Therefore, in all things, he, Jesus Christ, had to be made like his brethren, that he might be a merciful and faithful high priest in things pertaining to God, to make propitiation for the sins of the people." So, he's showing that man is tempted and we have sin, and God gives aid to us. He gives Jesus Christ to be able to bring us back to him. But he does not allow that same thing for Satan and for the angels that have fallen. And I believe very strongly that the reason that he doesn't is because they had full knowledge of exactly what they were doing, whereas man was in his infancy of spiritual knowledge at the time that he sinned, and therefore was not fully culpable. He was culpable in that he made the decision himself, but he didn't understand all the ramifications that that required, whereas Lucifer and the third of the angels that fell with him did. So I think that would be the answer to that.
Very nice. So, Guy Smiley asks a pretty deep theological question. He says, "If 11 Colorado Avalanche players and 11 Denver Bronco players played a game of soccer, who would win? And by the end of the game, how many of them would be gay?" Now, that's just not right. I'm not even going to...
That's just wrong.
I'm not even going to... I mean, that's just absolutely wrong. But this one comes from Cass, and
okay.
I believe this is a woman. I think so. But
Mama,
she asks, "Bible versions are always interesting. Which ones do you think are good, indifferent, and which ones do you avoid at all costs?" And,
well, the NIV is by far the best, no question. Sorry, I didn't mean to say that.
Actually, the NIV would be the one that I would avoid at all costs.
I would say at second to all costs. I still believe that people can be...
Yeah.
Yeah, the HIV,
that
not the NIV.
Our producer.
Our producer just held that up, and he's right. In fact, you know what's really funny is a couple weeks back, I was driving along the road, and I saw a book lying on the side of the road. And I thought, it looks like a Bible. So I pulled over, got out, got it, and sure enough, it's a Bible. So I'm trying to find the rightful owner, although now I have a moral conflict. It was kind of neat because there were a couple little notes in the front of it to his daughter. So I'm trying to find the rightful owner. I have not been able to do that yet of this Bible, although there's a couple of churches right in that area, so I figure it must come from one of those. But I'm trying to go to the phone book and find the guy's name because his name is in the Bible, but there's a bunch of them. But here's my moral conflict. It's an NIV.
Can you give him...
I know. Could I give him a replacement?
Give him a replacement.
That would be
Bible.
Okay, but it's kind of, I'm a little rough on giving it back to him because, you know, just for fun, I looked up that same verse that I just read a little bit ago in Hebrews 11:1 about faith.
Right.
Being the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen, and it is so perverted. There's no way you could get out of it what the Bible's trying to say from what they put in there. It is terrible. In fact, what it makes it sound like is we're supposed to believe in blind faith, the exact opposite of what the verse itself actually says. It just curled my skin when I saw that. I just was like, ah.
Well, I think for sake of the notes to the daughter in there, you should probably...
Yes. Oh, I'm still going to try
to. But maybe
to,
you
but
could tell him, you know,
I was thinking about putting a note in there.
Yeah.
Please.
Add to his notes.
Look into this.
That's the... I use the New King James.
I always use the New King James also, whenever I can. What do you think? Or which indifferent? What do you think? Well, now I could use the old King James too.
Yeah,
but,
and I do sometimes because I use my Bullinger Companion Bible, which I love.
Which I do too, and I love it. Although it is a little harder to read.
Right.
And you know, there's a couple little things. Now, obviously, none of the texts that we have today are 100% perfect because they've been translated by man, and there are some discrepancies. Now, atheists and people like that will try to use that as a argument against the Bible being the reliable since a word of God. But those of us who have studied it, we know what the truth is. And the truth is that the changes that are in the Bibles from their translations, they're small things usually. They can have some import, and that's why you want to study it when you think that there's a discrepancy. But usually it's something like this. When you're translating from, say, the language of Greek to English, and you're trying to say that he picked up a cup. Well, a cup could be a cup, a glass, a container, a vessel, a mug, a stein. There's all kinds of names for what it could be. So which name do you actually use for what the author was really trying to get across? Sometimes that's important, and usually with a cup it's not. Sometimes it is important because it might be something more important. I mean, something that's more vital that you get the exact word. So what the translator should always try to do is to get it to be the most exact translation that they possibly can for what they're trying to translate. And that's not always easy to do, but those are the kind of discrepancies we're talking about. And they're usually very slight and very insignificant. But still, when you're talking about the Word of God, you want to get it as close as you can. I don't want to harp on that, but that's why there are some differences. Like, for instance, in the Old King James, we know that in the Ten Commandments, they printed it as "thou shalt not kill." And that's a big problem for a lot of people because people who want to try to see their view in the Bible versus what God is really saying about something will argue little points like that.
They would take that as an anti-death penalty verse.
Exactly.
Even though just a couple of chapters later it talks about putting to death.
Right. In fact, the page before and the page after, they talk about putting people to death that God commands us to do. Not to murder them, but to put them to death.
Right.
So in the New King James, they corrected that and they put in the right word, which was used in the original manuscripts, which is, "thou shalt not murder." So little things like that. But little things like that, as we know on TOL, are what people use to try to discredit the Word of God all the time.
Exactly. All right, we got a couple of minutes left in the show, and just want to remind everybody, if you want to order some of Bob's products, which are absolutely awesome, you can either go to – I would just recommend going to his website, you know, KGOV, because I'm a web guy, an internet guy. So
just go
online, and you can get a whole list of everything he sells, from the plot, you know, which is his manuscript about the overview of the Bible, which I don't know if a day goes by that I don't recommend that online to somebody. And there's other things. Bob has a videotape about God and the death penalty. Speaking of which, Battle Royale 11 coming up in September.
Woo-hoo!
On TOL, which will be about the death penalty. It'll be Should Christians Support the Death Penalty? And that'll be between Turbo and Theo Victus.
That's going to be a battle.
And that'll start September 18th on Monday. And so we're really, really excited about that one.
And that's just a five-rounder, right?
It's a five-rounder, but we thought
fast and brutal.
We thought that was a good amount of time for this particular battle. So that starts in mid-September. But Bob also has the tape, which was one of the most valuable VHS tapes for me.
Absolutely.
When I was first becoming a Christian. It was funny, the death penalty tape, you think, why would that be a good a tape for somebody who's an early Christian? Well, it's a good tape because I supported the death penalty, but I wasn't sure
why.
You know, why, or now I'm a Christian, should I still, you know, and you know, that kind of thing. So that videotape was really powerful for me. I think it was for you too.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites.
Yeah, it's one
in
of
fact,
my favorites.
In fact, Bob makes a claim in there which really does show you how important the death penalty is, because a lot of Christians say, well, so what? We can just agree to disagree on that. You really can't, because Bob shows that the death penalty debate is at the center of Christianity, and it's at the center of believing in God. Because why? It's because there is a price to pay for sin, and the price is death. And you have to know that, and you have to know why, and you have to be able to find out why. And it's a great teacher on that. So that's one of your favorites, one of my favorites too. And then Mount Moriah. The plot, Mount Moriah, and the death penalty are my three things I couldn't hardly go without. They're just the greatest.
Yeah, I think the plot's really great for people that are Christians.
Right.
But the other two tapes,
non-Christians,
Mount Moriah and the death penalty, if you know somebody who's like a conservative, or you think that maybe they're getting close to becoming a Christian, they're just sort of weighing things in their mind, those are two tapes I would recommend giving as a gift. Because I know those two tapes for me were
They were inspirational and proving points for us.
Yeah.
It made us say, now I know why I believe what I believe, because it's so obviously true, which is great.
So I think we've had I've had a fun time hosting the show today. I'm glad that Bob asked us back.
And I think we're going to get to do it next Monday unless he listens to this show.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't, then we'll be back next Monday, right?
We will be back next Monday. So hopefully we can get some other questions, some other callers. The callers were great.
Yeah. Oh, they were
Jeremy
awesome.
Jeremy and Josh. And, and I forgot the other couple right now, I'll think of them. But anyways, thanks for having us on, and we'll see you next Monday. And tune in tomorrow. There'll be some other guest hosts.
That's right. Remember that, do right and risk the consequences.